Hello, I'm Lauren Roberts. This is number 0312, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0312. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Robert Schnackenberg, author of The Big Bad Book of Bill Murray. It tells his life from A to Z. So why choose Bill Murray?
Their life and career is sort of adaptable to the A to Z format. You want to have somebody who's known as much for their off-camera antics as the parts that they play on screen. So you can mix it up a lot with entries about their films as well as entries about their private lives and their antics off screen. So it's a question of, you know, narrowing the list of celebrities down to the people who really are adaptable to this format.
Troy DeLeon is the owner of a rogue Dairy Queen in Moorhead, Minnesota that serves up more than just Dairy Queen fare. And since getting news publicity, they've gotten even more popular.
Lately, since the story broke, we have families diverting their family vacations to come here, and it's very exciting. And they're ordering one of each of the unusual items, like a Polish sausage, because I don't know if there's any store in the country that sells a Polish sausage, and we actually have two different sizes. Then our chili dog, which we make our own chili, and then a chipper sandwich, which is a chocolate chip cookie on the top and bottom, and then vanilla ice cream in between, and then we dip that vanilla ice cream in chocolate.
Fantasy sport expert Tony Cotillo is back on the show to talk about the battle between fantasy sports and gambling establishments. Should fantasy sports betting be regulated like gambling?
No, only because, take for instance a slot machine. Slot machines are basically pure chance. I mean, there's no hardcore statistics or evidence that says we know how a slot machine works. We know what kind of patterns are going to come out. It's just purely luck. Where fantasy, it's taking into account that highly skilled players win more frequently, the ones who spend more time.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0312, was Lauren Roberts, a TV producer and pop culture connoisseur for a Canadian entertainment show. She works out of Toronto. Thank you very, very much, Lauren, for doing the guest slate on this program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 27-year-old Randell Bush was in serious condition after being shot on July 26th near the corner of 18th Street and Emmett Street in Omaha, Nebraska. He was also shot in 2014 around the intersection of 18th and Emmett, and in 2012 was shot in a scuffle after running from the corner of 18th and Emmett. Okay, this is like that old joke. Doctor, it hurts when I do this. Well, don't do this. I mean, clearly this is a guy who should stay away from the corner of 18th and Emmett. And a woman in a suburb of Beijing filed a lawsuit against the China Dragon Garden Graveyard recently over her shock to find that not only was her name affixed to a headstone in gold lettering, but about half of the 600 plots were eerily marked for prominent and still living people to move into. It was a marketing plan, according to the cemetery workers, to convince customers of the upscale neighbors, such as basketball star Yao Ming, waiting for them in the afterlife. China's aging population and Beijing's land scarcity have driven up prices, intensifying competition and corrupt practices, according to a Los Angeles Times dispatch. Now this is a mystery where, literally, the plot thickens. It's a neighborhood where people are dying to get in. Jason Patterson, upset that New Zealand's healthcare administration has rejected paying for gastric bypass surgery, announced in July that he will protest publicly by going on a hunger strike. Yeah, the first 2 or 3 days will be really hard, he told Channel 3 News. Now, does anybody Anybody see the irony in this story? Anybody? Now, if you've listened to this show in the past, then you may already know how I feel about hunger strikes. The idea of you not eating is going to affect me in some way, shape, or form as far as my thought process is concerned is absolutely ludicrous. You're not going to affect me in one iota. In fact, you going on a hunger strike might make me want to sit down in front of you and enjoy a 7-course meal just for spite. Yeah. Okay. Some owners may be petting their cats all wrong, cautioned a recent research in issues of the Journal of Applied Animal Behavior Science by scientists from the University of Lincoln in England and the University of Wisconsin-Madison. For example, felines seem to prefer face caressing, especially between the eyes and ears, and are especially aroused negatively by tail petting, especially at its base. Cats appear to be pickier about how their owners pet them than strangers, according to a Washington Post review of one of the articles. The Wisconsin research also revealed that cats better appreciate or are less annoyed by music written especially for their pitch, whatever pitch that might be, I'm not quite sure how that works, and also an octave higher, a tempo that mimics their purring, rather than the traditional classical music that now exists out there. So now we're supposed to cater music to cats, I guess. I share this story, but then I ask, just why is it we care? I mean, really. As you know, cats are evil. Little pieces of evil plotting against mankind. Moving right along, Maine enacted legislation in July to make immigrant asylum seekers eligible for the state's General Assistance Fund. That's contrary to Governor Paul LePage's aggressive promise to veto the bill. The governor had misunderstood state law and believed legislation would be regarded as vetoed if he merely failed to sign it for 10 days. Well, LePage appeared stunned, I say, on the 11th day, according to press reports, that he had the veto law backward and that asylum seekers are now eligible for benefits. Nothing like not knowing the veto law when you're actually the governor of the state, huh? Classic. We have a couple of stories to share with you right now that deal with epic clumsiness. Number one, a guest at the upscale W Hotel in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, had to be rescued by firefighters in July when he fell off one machine in the hotel's exercise room and got his head caught in the next one to it. Rescuers arrived with torches and saws but managed to pull and push and manipulate the man's head free, though he had significant injuries. I'll bet he'll be satisfied just being a couch potato from here on in the future. And number two, a 27-year-old man entertaining friends at his home in Colmar, France, on the country's national day, that would be July 14th, Bastille Day, suffered serious injuries when he fell from his third-floor balcony while, said his friends, leaning over to spit on police officers below. Oh, that's just karma, isn't it? Do you think the cops ended up laughing? Yeah. 31-year-old Scott Burke was arrested in New Berlin, Wisconsin in July, thanks to a big boost the police got from his 6-year-old daughter. A Walmart security guard noticed on video someone breaking into a jewelry case and pocketing earrings and approached Burke as a suspect in time to overhear the girl tell her dad several times to stop breaking into jewelry cases. Officers running an ID check found no driver's license and asked how he had gotten to the store, and he said he had walked. "But Daddy," she said, "we came in our car," and she cheerfully pointed it out to police. A search turned up more items stuffed in Burke's shorts, and he was charged with theft and violating a previous bail condition. Ah, yes, out of the mouths of babes, huh? Somebody has clearly taught her the difference between right and wrong. Now, if only someone could teach that to her dad. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 68-year-old Michael Crawford was arrested when he arrived in Phoenix in July, expecting, according to the sheriff's office, to have sex with a horse. Crawford had allegedly posted an online ad seeking horse owners who would allow him access to have his brief flings. In arranging the meeting with an undercover deputy, Crawford had volunteered that he would be bringing 5 shirts with him for the horse to urinate on as memories of the trip. Yeah, let's all say it together, folks. And by the way, you have to know that at 68 years old, this can't exactly be his first rodeo, if you know what I mean. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Robert Schnackenberg has been on the show before. He's a very prolific writer. The last time we had him on the show, he talked about the Underground Football Encyclopedia. He's also written such books as Encyclopedia Shatnerica, which has everything you ever wanted to know about William Shatner, and Christopher Walken, A to Z. Well, his latest book is called The Big Bad Book of Bill Murray. Robert is on the line with us right now from New York. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Peter. Good to talk to you again.
Good to have you on the program once again. You have these unique books that you come out with, so I got to ask right off the bat, after finishing one, like the Christopher Walken book or the William Shatner book, how do you decide who you want to tackle next, like in this case, Bill Murray?
Well, we kind of try and look for somebody who has similar qualities to the previous two, Shatner and Walken, somebody who's had a long career, who's given a lot of interviews and said a lot of interesting things, so that they're kind of, their life and career is sort of adaptable to the A to Z format. We want to have somebody who's known as much for their off-camera antics as the parts that they play on screen, so you can have a lot of, you can mix it up a lot with entries about their films as well as entries about their private lives and their antics off screen. So it's a question of, you know, narrowing the list of celebrities down to the people who really are adaptable to this format.
It's interesting because in looking at the three gentlemen that I'd mentioned, you said, the one thing that's interesting about them is they have done a lot of interviews and their personalities seem to be somewhat quirky in their own way, but all three of them also seem to be somewhat mysterious too.
That's true. I mean, they're all icons in their own way, and I think all three of them have kind of grown and adapted over the years that they've been in the public eye. You know, Shatner went from being a leading man on Star Trek to sort of a camp figure doing game shows in the 70s and then Priceline commercials and so forth. And Christopher Walken started out as a leading man, kind of playing gigolo parts, and he's become sort of a go-to character actor, and he's developed a comic persona over the years. And Bill Murray, he also went from, you know, a comic lead early in his career to a respected dramatic actor who's capable of, you know, tremendous pathos in movies like, you know, Rushmore and Lost in Translation. So it's the longevity of their careers and also their ability to kind of reinvent themselves and stay relevant, you know, as the world around them changes, they kind of adapt to new circumstances.
I think they're also unique in one certain way. It's a throwback to what Hollywood used to be. I mean, I remember when I was growing up as a kid, you would see on television a lot of impersonators, people like the Frank Gorshins of the world who would impersonate big Hollywood stars. And you don't see a lot of people doing impersonations these days because the larger-than-life stars that existed don't really seem to exist in that way. But here are three gentlemen who are impersonated.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, well, I mean, Walken and Shatner in particular have been the subject of many famous impersonations. And, you know, Murray is certainly larger than life and has become this sort of, you know, weird, iconic figure with his odd public appearances and appears in so many, you know, YouTube videos and has kind of sort of been able to go viral in a way that very few celebrities are able to. So, They all have that in common. They're certainly bigger than life and provide a lot of grist for people who are looking for people to mock and impersonate.
So I know you're a big fan of Bill Murray, so you put this book together. But even though you're a major fan, in doing the research, what some of the bigger revelations you discovered, things you didn't know about Bill Murray?
There was actually quite a lot. I mean, I didn't know he was pre-med in college. I mean, that kind of surprised me. He wanted to be a doctor originally, specifically a doctor on a tropical island. He wanted to be the the kind of doctor who, you know, prescribed Mai Tais to wealthy tourists and, you know, smoked a lot of weed in his cabana. But that didn't work out for him because he actually got busted for carrying marijuana on a plane in 1970 and had to drop out of college. So his medical dreams kind of went up in smoke. I was surprised to find out he was in a folk band in high school. I knew he was in a rock and roll band, but I actually found somebody who went to high school with him and was able to interview him and found out he was also in a folk trio called the Snake City Trio. And I was able to acquire one of the rare photographs of Bill Murray in high school with his three-man folk band.
Wow. So you had to do a lot of digging, didn't you?
Yeah, a lot of digging, a lot of, you know, kind of nagging people to try and get me interviews, many of which were politely turned down. As you probably know, Bill is a very private guy. He's only accessible through the mysterious 800 number. And, you know, a lot of his friends and associates kind of keep things on the down low and don't like to talk to the press or writers about what goes on in his private life. So a lot of them were reluctant to talk. I did find a number of people who were willing to give me interviews on the record and was happy to use a lot of their quotes in the book, but most of the book being unauthorized is just the product of research and digging up just about every interview by or about Bill Murray and every magazine article and sort of culling those your interesting quotes and anecdotes, which is the same formula I used in the previous two books.
Well, and that's one of the things I wanted to ask. I mean, this book is just out now, the Big Bad Book of Bill Murray. Is Bill aware of the book? Have you heard from him at all? And the same thing I'm asking of both William Shatner and Christopher Walken.
Yeah, I know William Shatner knows about the book I wrote about him because he actually wrote about it in his memoir and said nice things about the book, which I've appropriated and used as blurbs subsequently. I mailed a book to Christopher Walken at his home. I didn't get a reply, so he definitely has the book. And with Bill Murray, I made every effort to contact him. I wrote to his lawyer. I spoke to one of his sons by email. I emailed a lot of people in his sort of intimate orbit, so I can presume that he's aware that the book exists since I talked directly to relatives of his. So one can only hope that they're letting him know about it. And I was hoping that if there was going to be a cease and desist letter, it would sort of arrive early in the process before I had to write, you know, 80,000 words about him. So he hasn't contacted me yet, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't know about the book.
Again, the title is The Big Bad Book of Bill Murray, the subtitle, A Critical Appreciation of the World's Finest Actor. When you come up with the ideas for these books, in the case of this one, why the title The Big Bad Book?
That was my editor's title. We had kind of gone with a more prosaic title for the Walken book, Christopher Walken A to Z. So I think we were looking for something just a little bolder and jazzier for the Murray book. And that was really the first title my editor suggested. And I said, that's it, let's go with it. So,
as someone, as you just described, who is so private, I mean, we've heard the stories, even people who want to hire him for movies sometimes don't know where to send scripts, and there's that infamous 800 number you're referring to. Was this a more difficult process of putting this book together than the previous two?
No, it was actually a lot easier because, you know, when I did the Shatner book in 1998, the internet was in its infancy, so there was no YouTube. There was really no way to watch old Shatner performances unless you could go to the Museum of Television and Radio, or you know, you could get bootleg DVDs sent to you in the mail, and that's how I did a lot of the research for that book. By the time we got to this one, everything's available, everything's on YouTube. His odd public appearances are sometimes captured on video or in photographs that circulate very easily. So it was a dream not to have to spend so much time in the library, not to spend so much time on eBay ordering, you know, VHS copies of old movies. I could just, you know, Netflix them, and I watched every Bill Murray movie in chronological order from the first one to the most recent one. So it was actually quite a bit easier than the other two books. Mm.
As the other two books, especially the Christopher Walken one, is right there in the title, Christopher Walken from A to Z, you do cover Bill Murray's life in this book in alphabetical order, correct?
That is correct. It's an A to Z encyclopedia with some appendices of quotes by and about Bill Murray, a chronological filmography, and it's studded with full-color photographs. But, yeah, it's an A to Z format with a lot of sidebars and stuff.
You're almost becoming the Wikipedia of the Dead Tree Society.
If Wikipedia wants to hire me, I'd love to. If a consultancy could be in the offing. I would be happy to, to do that. These are really the only three celebrities I know anything about, so my base of knowledge might be limited. But I'm available.
Are you working on another one in the future?
I think this might be it for the A to Z. I mean, they're very labor intensive, and we kind of wanted to do a third one just to round out the trilogy. I think I had, visions in my head of a three-volume leather slipcase edition of Shatner, Walken, and Murray. I just could just see that sitting on my desk, when I'm 80, and just kind of reflecting upon it. So that this sounds like a nice round number of three volumes. I think that might be it. Plus, we have a lot of trouble coming up with another celebrity that would really fit the format the way these three guys did.
Mm. Well, the book is called The Big Bad Book of Bill Murray, A Critical Appreciation of the World's Finest Actor. It's written by Robert Schnackenberg. And Robert, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us once again.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Robert Schnackenberg, author of The Big Bad Book of Bill Murray. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0312, and you'll find links to Robert's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the owner of a rogue Dairy Queen in Minnesota. Plus, Tony Cotillo is back on the program. He's a fantasy sports expert. We'll talk about fantasy sports versus established gambling. That's coming up a little later on. Plus, of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way at the end of the program. Stick around for that. But right now, more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A mailman has been arrested for entering a woman's home and then walking around the home in her boots. Dover police in New Hampshire said the resident contacted authorities after seeing someone on her in-home video surveillance system. The resident saw the images on her phone while she was at work. Police said the images show 39-year-old Richard Ringer entering the home and walking through it. One image shows Ringer wearing a pair of the woman's boots. Police said it doesn't appear that Ringer actually stole anything. While investigating, Ringer was quickly identified because he is the postal carrier for the road and was on his route at the time of the trespass. He was found within hours of the incident wearing the same clothes as he was wearing on the surveillance video. Police charged Ringer with two counts of criminal trespass. He was released on $2,500 personal recognizance bail. Now that the story is out, I'm sure there is someone on his route who has ordered items from such places as, say, perhaps Victoria's Secret, who are now just really, really, really creeped out. Really creeped out. Apparently, uncooperative child dental patients, even toddlers, can be totally restrained on a straitjacket-like papoose board without parental hand-holding even during tooth-pulling, as long as the parent has signed a consent form that does specifically mention the frightening practice. A recent case arose in Carrollton, Georgia, but a Georgia Board of Dentistry spokesperson told Atlanta's WSB-TV that such restraints are permitted, though should have been accompanied by an explicit warning of potential physical or psychological harm. The father of a screaming girl said he was initially barred from the exam room and was led to believe when he signed the consent form that he was merely authorizing anesthesia. Yeah, that's going to lead to a lifetime of therapy, don't you think? And I'm suggesting that at no time should any of these kids, when they grow up, watch Sir Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman in Marathon Man. That might be a bad idea. And stay away from the phrase, is it safe? Okay, to address issues with the homeless in Madison, Wisconsin, Mayor Paul Soglin is proposing some new regulations for the downtown area. Madison's transient drifter population is growing every week, Soglin said. We've created a circus atmosphere where anything goes. But his new proposal doesn't include words like homeless or transient, because the city's posture of compassion requires not singling them out in laws. Thus, the proposed law prohibits everyone, from sitting, lying on, or occupying a public bench for more than an hour, and bans anyone from sitting, lying, or lodging on sidewalks or streets. Exceptions include medical emergencies, people watching parades, and people with disabilities, but only if they require more than an hour's rest. So, since they're too compassionate to harass the homeless, apparently they'll just harass everyone. Yeah. Next time I sit on a park bench, I'll make sure to bring a stopwatch. The Columbus, Ohio Zoo and Aquarium is pressing charges against 35-year-old Joshua Newell after video surfaced of a man alleged to be Newell. In the video, the man could be seen holding the camera while jumping a wooden fence at the zoo's cougar exhibit, then approaching the wire fence, calling, "Here, kitty, 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 kitty," and petting two cougars in the enclosure. "Animal welfare and safety are two of our top priorities," said Tom Stauff, who was the president and CEO of the zoo. "The actions taken in this video were alarming and resulted in our decision to press charges, which would be criminal trespassing." The video was obtained when Newell posted it on YouTube. Of course, he posted it on YouTube, because everyone knows the top attraction online is cute cat videos. Palm Beach County, Florida sheriff's deputies spotted a wanted man, 43-year-old Donald Howard, appeared to be working on his car on the side of the road, but when they stopped to speak to him, deputies say, Howard jumped into his car and took off. He drove through the yards of several homes and got tangled in a fence, so he jumped out and ran, and deputies lost sight of him. Howard allegedly broke into several homes to change his clothes and get something to drink. Deputies followed a trail of discarded juice boxes and, incidentally, jewelry and other items allegedly stolen from the homes. The search team grew to 20 deputies, 5 local police officers, 4 sheriff's dogs, and a sheriff's helicopter. When Howard was spotted, deputies would order him to stop, but he would just respond, "Bleep you," and run off again. He finally collapsed 2.5 hours later, exhausted a few blocks from where the whole chase started. Out of breath, Howard told officers he needed some water because he was extremely thirsty from recently smoking crack. Howard's rap sheet, by the way, goes back 22 years, but yet he has somehow managed to always avoid prison time. Well, methinks there is a first time for everything, and this would be it. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 50-year-old Pamela Beckham was getting her grandkids out of the car when 62-year-old Marilyn Perry drove into the scene and broke Beckham's neck. Bellevue, Ohio police ruled out drugs, alcohol, and cell phone use as the cause of the crash. Perry herself revealed the answer. She had been calling on God, praying over some problems in her life, even bowing her head sometimes as she drove. Perry was convicted of vehicular assault and sent to an intervention program. Oh, I think she's been seeking intervention too much already, don't you? Yeah. By the way, there is a country song called Jesus Take the Wheel. You know it's just a song, right? It's just a song. Do we have to have on the books now, do not pray and drive? Heaven forbid, leave that for her passengers. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? There was a recent article in the New York Post headlined, Rogue Dairy Queen Has Been Ignoring Corporate HQ Since 1949. It goes on to tell the story about this one establishment in Moorhead, Minnesota. It seems that not everything on their menu is DQ sanctioned, but it is a major hit with their customers. The Dairy Queen is run by the husband and wife team of Troy and Diane DeLeon. And Troy joins us on the line right now. Hi, Troy.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you guys have not owned it since 1949, right?
No, but we are the second owners, and we've had it for 20 years.
Was it always a place that you know, traveled to the drum of their own beat, so to speak? Or the beat of their own drum, I should say?
Yes, most definitely. The previous owners, he was always thinking of something special, you know, just to draw people in, because the corporation does so much, and he wanted to do more locally. So the way he did things was to create unusual items. Like, for instance, he had a flaming sundae where he would dip a sugar cube in I have no idea what, but then he'd light it on fire. You know, he would do things like that to make things unique and separate himself from everybody else.
So 20 years ago, when you and your wife got a hold of this particular Dairy Queen, you decided to continue the trend of being a little more off the beaten path and unique from what the Dairy Queen normally offers?
Yes. I mean, they created something that we could never just start with the history of this store. And doing the unusual things and the traditional things, that's what set them apart from other franchises and other at that time Dairy Queens, now they're called DQ Grill and Chills, set them apart from them and made them unique and gave people a reason to come to this store, and that's what we still try to do. Corporate themselves, they put in a Grill and Chill about a mile and a half away, and the gentleman that is now the CEO or CFO told us, be different, be unique. You guys have the opportunity to be different. So that's what we did. We kind of, you know, took his interest and just went above and beyond what most stores could actually do because of our contract that we have to set us apart and make us different.
Okay, so what you're doing, even though it's not what the rest of the Dairy Queen chain does, what you're doing, to a certain degree, sounds like it is at least sanctioned by Dairy Queen. They're allowing you.
Well, they don't have a choice. With our contract that we have, we don't follow the, you know, I mean, our contract is a two-page contract that's handwritten by a person in layman's terms, not in legal mumbo-jumbo that no one could understand. You could look at it, and you can totally understand exactly what they're talking about. And where nowadays, you know, it's 150 pages, and most of it is just litigation from things that have happened years ago, you know?
And is this contract the contract that goes back to 1949?
Yes, it does, and then it goes forward. If you came down here and wanted to purchase this store, it would transfer to you.
Wow.
And then if you sold it to another person, as long as it does not get sold back to the corporation, it will go on forever.
Wow. Now, this particular Dairy Queen, your Dairy Queen in Moorhead, is one of the ones that does not have a sit-down component, right? Is that correct?
Correct. We have a sit-down, but it's outside. We are a traditional Dairy Queen. We have three windows that people walk up to, and then we have a large patio with two very large umbrellas, and then we have nice picnic tables and a retaining wall that we first built around one of our patios, and then we extended our patio out for more seating. But we keep that as clean as most restaurants do their inside seating area.
Okay, so you have this area, and as you mentioned earlier, there was a Dairy Queen, a more traditional HQ type of Dairy Queen, not too far from you. How has that affected business with one nearby?
For us, going back to our contract, we can do things different that they cannot do. Like, for instance, the corporate discontinued, it's been probably 4 or 5 years, butterscotch, which butterscotch topping is one of our favorite things for our customers and gives people a reason to come here because the newer stores do not have that. We've got 13 different toppings where most grill and chills have six. To give you an idea, and people want that variety. They want a choice. And then another thing that we're doing right now, we do in August, we purchase peaches, and we make a wonderful peach topping, which no one else does. There's no one in the country that I know or even have heard of that has peach topping, but yet we do.
Now I understand
we can do that.
I understand the clientele really love your establishment, despite the fact that it's purely outdoors. It only opens because of that in the summertime. And I understand a couple of years ago you opened up on March 1st as you normally do. It was 11 degrees below zero, and 1,200 people showed up on opening day.
Yes, with wind chill is 18 below, and it was crazy. It was a lot of fun. We try to have a good time. We make it exciting. We go out and greet the customers and really make it an event and have fun with it. And that was an exceptional day with the temperatures that we had, yes.
Now, when you woke up that morning saying, okay, we're opening up today, we're going to work, did you anticipate how busy you were going to be that day?
Traditionally, we're pretty busy on opening day, but not considering the temperatures. Not like that. We had no expectation, and we're used to. If you had been here a week ago, we probably had 400 people in line. It went to the north of our store and then down our parking lot halfway to the Walgreens store, which is about 150, 200 yards away. We generally are very busy, so we prepare for certain things, and we know when we first open, we prepare for a lot, but when it's that cold, we didn't think it would be as crazy as it was. But it was a lot of fun. We're used to it. Our coworkers are used to it. That's one thing. If we're really busy, stand in line for a little bit. It's not going to take long to get up front and place your order.
Looking at that article that was in the New York Post, there are some people who even come from out of state to come to your Dairy Queen.
Yes, we have people driving from all over the area, and lately, since the story broke, we have families diverting their family vacations to come here, and it's very exciting. And they're ordering one of each of the unusual items, like a Polish sausage, because I don't know if there's any store in the country that sells a Polish sausage, and we actually have two different sizes. Then our chili dog, which we make our own chili. We don't buy pre-processed chili out of a can. We make it. And then a chipper sandwich, which is a chocolate chip cookie on the top and bottom, and then vanilla ice cream in between, and then we dip that vanilla ice cream in chocolate. Mr. Maltese, it's like a chocolate malt on a stick. We have those in a small 3-ounce cup that it's for 75 cents. And where can you go nowadays and get something at a fast food restaurant for 75 cents besides an added topping? But they order all the different and unusual things that we have, and it's a lot of fun.
You're making my mouth water as you describe all of these things.
They're really good, I'll tell you. We've had those, well, we've been making them for 20 years, and they are fantastic.
Are you always looking for new ideas for the Dairy Queen, or do customers come and make suggestions as things they would like that you might try to do?
Both. We will do both. We've had suggestions, and then I'm always kind of creating different things. For instance, when a few years ago, corporate decided to do waffles, waffle cones, and waffle bowls. Well, I thought of something different, and that is taking a waffle and putting it into the shape of a taco. I have a friend that has a plastics company, and he made me some forms so I could form the waffle into the shape of a taco. And then I would fill it with a Blizzard flavor and then dip the corners in chocolate so it would be a chocolate coated on the edges. And that was something that was really fantastic. And then corporate came out with a waffle cone with a Blizzard flavor in it. You know, did they get that idea from me?
Well,
or, you know, because we never know, you know, where they get their ideas from. And I'm just thinking, well, we probably gave, they couldn't do the taco because they didn't know how to get the form. So they just said, let's do this. It's easier. So since then, I had to kind of stop making my tacos because people want that. It's more popular and it's easier to do.
Mm. Well, I got to admit, you certainly are being very creative and giving the population exactly what they want. You already mentioned that some people are planning their vacation since the press stories came out about your establishment. What other types of things have you noticed since you've been getting this publicity?
It's just the attention, I guess, and it's, you know, we're just riding the wave, trying to be as nice as possible, and that's one thing. A lot of people say, well, don't let it go to your head. There's no head to let it go to. You know, we just try to have fun and keep doing the same thing we do every day and make the people that are traveling through, we make it enjoyable for them. But then the locals really like it because they like hearing the stories from people driving in from different areas and try to make fun of the situation. And then our base is just growing that much farther. Traditionally, people will drive 50, 60 miles to come here.
Wow.
Now it's probably a little bit more than that.
You guys
and
are...
We make it fun.
You guys are obviously very, very busy. I know I've been trying to get in contact with you a little while to set this thing up, and it's always, of course, during business days, and you guys are very, very busy there. So I thank you very much for taking a little bit of time to talk with us, and continued success with your Dairy Queen in Moorhead, Minnesota.
Well, thank you very much, and we appreciate you contacting us because the more people, you know, the more we get out to people, maybe they'll stop by and have a treat, and we'd love to meet them.
Troy DeLeon, co-owner with his wife Diane of a Dairy Queen in Moorhead, Minnesota. You can check out their website at moorheaddairyqueen.com, and of course, you can find the link to their website on my website at thestufffile.com. You'll find that link also to the original story from the New York Post talking about their establishment. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0312, and you'll find it. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. They say that every dog has his day, but let's hope that a recent lawsuit filed over a popular dog treat never sees its day in court. A New York man has filed a class action lawsuit against the makers of bacon strips, claiming he was misled into thinking the treats are made primarily from real bacon. The treats do resemble bacon, and TV ads depict a cartoon dog asking, "Where's the bacon?" But aren't we humans supposed to be smarter than our dogs? The labeling on the treats clearly states that bacon is only a minor ingredient in bacon strips, and the product complies with all state and federal labeling requirements. Despite this, the man is still suing for $5 million. Let's be fair, millions of consumers have used this product for their pets for more than 20 years, knowing full well it's not really bacon. Lawsuits like this make a mockery of our justice system. And because of that, the rest of us, who would never think of filing a lawsuit like this, are the ones who are now doing the begging. Begging for more common sense in our courts. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come, we'll talk about fantasy sports versus gambling. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day, but I got one more Stuff File news story to share with you right here, right now. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Police responding to a shots fired call in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, found 36-year-old Daniel Collins carrying an unlicensed pistol. Collins was arrested and charged with a misdemeanor count of endangering safety with a firearm and possession of drug paraphernalia. He allegedly admitted that he was shooting at streetlights because he says he's an extraterrestrial and he was trying to protect the universe from other aliens. He was not a very good shot, commented Police Lieutenant Kevin Schwartz, because he didn't hit any of the lights. Yeah, but who knows how many space aliens he hit. Got to check that out, don't you? Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? The world of fantasy football is encroaching into the world of gambling, and the gambling world isn't too happy about it. The two fantasy sports startups which led the industry, FanDuel and DraftKings, have both raised hundreds of millions of dollars in funding in the past few weeks, scoring valuations of about $1 billion each. That sparked some frustration at major gambling companies such as MGM Resorts International and Boyd Gaming Corporation, as well as sportsbook companies such as William Hill PLC, which have said that they want to see daily fantasy sports regulated like gambling. So, should it be? We put that question to fantasy sports expert Tony Cotillo. He joins us once again on the line from Philadelphia. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So,
absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
I know a lot of people are very familiar with fantasy football and how it works over the course of a season, but how different is this daily sports betting in fantasy sports? How does that work?
I think it's dramatically different. It's basically skill compared to luck. And the reason why I say that is there's so many different activities that you have to take into account in fantasy sports. It's more than just putting a lineup in. There are games of skills where managers must take into account a myriad of statistics, facts, game theory, all in order to be competitive.
Okay, so as I mentioned in the introduction, one of the concerns is from gambling establishments, current gambling establishments, is that this should be regulated like gambling. Do you think it should be?
No, only because, take for instance a slot machine. Slot machines are basically pure chance. I mean, there's no hardcore statistics or evidence that says we know how a slot machine works. We know what kind of patterns are going to come out. It's just purely luck. Where fantasy, it's taking into account the highly skilled players win more frequently, the ones who spend more time. In that article that you're pertaining to, it's amazing that, you know, this one guy quit a full-time job at 31 years old and spends $40,000 a week on gambling in fantasy sports. Now, what I can say is FanDuel and DraftKings have really taken the argument to another level, which is why all these statistics and articles are coming out.
Okay, and we should mention the article that we're talking about is from Reuters, and the headline is Daily Fantasy Sports Land in Gambling's Industry's Crosshairs. Now, you mentioned that when it comes to gambling, there's certain luck involved. It's not necessarily skill, but doesn't horse racing come under gambling? And isn't that, when you think about it, an early form of fantasy sports? I mean, you have to do a certain amount of homework, and if you do a certain amount of homework, you could have more than just luck. You have skill involved.
Yes. I mean, it's a very fine line. If you read the Unlawful Internet Gambling Act of 2006 that carved out the language that clarified legality of fantasy sports, it says the act makes transactions from banks or similar institutions to online gambling sites illegal, with notable exceptions of fantasy sports, online lotteries, and horse racing, which is pretty ironic that, you know, they both fall into the same thing, because your argument is valid. But it's a very fine line when it comes to pure luck versus skill. And I really think that fantasy is a game more of skill than luck.
Okay, so you answered the question as to whether you think fantasy football under these circumstances should be regulated. Now, that's what you think. Do you think, though, that it would happen?
I think it's a 50-50 shot. And the reason why I say that, it's more inclined to happen now because of the two sites that we aforementioned, which are DraftKings and FanDuel. I mean, FanDuel and DraftKings. And the reason why is we went from, you know, other sites doing fantasy leagues where we're talking maybe $100 or $200 for the entire year, where now we're talking about millions of dollars being spent weekly and monthly. So that obviously is going to attract the gambling commission. And you and I both know if they can get their hands on it and make a profit, obviously they're going to drop.
Now, let me go back to the first question I asked, and that is the difference between fantasy sports, somebody who drafts a team and has it for an entire year, and what is being talked about here, daily fantasy sports. What exactly is at stake here? How does daily fantasy sports work?
Well, basically, daily fantasy sports is different because you don't have the same team on a weekly basis. Daily fantasy sports, you can go in nightly on a daily basis and pick different players every single day. And you're taking into account cash records, you're taking into account injuries, starting lineups, home and away records. And basically, you get to pick a different player every day to perform to what you think is going to be the top of their ability. So, again, it's more, that's not luck. That's a lot of research that you're taking into account, which is why I think it's more skill-based than luck-based.
Okay, now, we did say every day, but in reality, football is only played nowadays Thursdays and some Sunday game, some Saturday games.
Saturday. And they try to add as many as possible.
And Sunday. So when we're saying every day, are we really saying every day or every week?
Well, I guess what we're saying every day is we're taking into account the other sports, basketball, we're taking into account baseball, because, you know, this isn't just about fantasy football. This is about fantasy sports in general. So we're covering more of a range than just football. So obviously on a baseball contest, they play 6-7 games a week. So we're talking about a daily operation. But with football, yes, you can have a different lineup every week. If with FanDuel and DraftKings, though, it's more of a more amount of money than it would be on a friendly competition.
When it comes to fantasy sports, and I'm going to go back to football again and get with that,
sure.
I know for a fact, I mean, we hear them talking about it in press conferences, and we know for a fact that even the players themselves play fantasy football. Does this become a gray area? There's a slippery slope between, you know, the myriad of fantasy sports sites out there that are just merely for fun and those which involve money. And is the league, or even the other football, other major leagues rather, is there a concern about their players playing fantasy sports, which could lead to gambling?
You know, I think there should be. And the funny part is, and, you know, I think me and you touched on this before, there was a time not long ago where these associations did not want their players or teams associated with the word fantasy. And over the last couple of years, they've taken hold of it, and they've basically been okay with the association. So, I mean, you have major media companies in the U.S., all of them, Yahoo, ESPN, NBC, Sports Illustrated, etc. They all condone fantasy sports. You have NASCAR, NHL, PGA. I mean, just like you said, now all of a sudden they are all condoning fantasy sports. So, yes, it's a very fine line as we talk about gambling in sports, but I think it's going to be an argument that's going to be hard to pass.
When you mention the major networks, there's more than condoning going on. Those major networks, all of them, actually have their own fantasy leagues. You can join CBS's, you can join Fox's,
yep.
The list goes on and on and on, and they're involved directly with fantasy football. And if you watch the NFL Network, there are shows dedicated to a network that is basically owned by the NFL, where they give you fantasy stats day in and day out.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, just with Yahoo, for instance, Yahoo never used to be a monetary value based on fantasy leagues until this year. Now, all of a sudden, they are getting into it, and they're actually offering a fee where you could pay in order to win a monetary value at the end of the year. So it's very interesting, like you said, that there are so many variety of ways to get your communication and get your information for these fantasy leagues, whether it be network TV, whether it be the internet. Everybody seems to be making money off of this. And I think that's why eventually they might have to cave. The gambling commission could come in and try to calm down and say, hey, we want a part of this too.
Well, the other side of that coin, you said it's about 50-50 if the two major startups can, or the gaming companies can prevent those major startups from not being regulated in any way, shape, or form. What about the old saying, if you can't beat them, join them? What about the current gambling companies that we know of, like the MGM Resorts International and Boyd Gaming Corporation, getting into the fantasy world themselves?
I don't think they haven't thought of it, and that's a perfect point, because think about how much money could be consumed in fantasy sports if it was allowed in casinos and sports betting legally. So, I mean, I have a hard time thinking it will not show up there eventually because it has evolved over the course since about 1980. It's such a big, big media monster. So I have a feeling that no matter what, we're going to see it on that grand stage anytime soon.
Tony, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. We should mention once again your website, fantasysportsaddiction.com. People can check that out. Thanks for being on the show with us once again.
Thanks for having me, Peter. I appreciate it.
Fantasy sports expert Tony Cotillo. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0312, and you'll find the link to Tony's. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
44-year-old Jason Stange, who became a fugitive last year by walking away from a Spokane, Washington halfway house while on probation for bank robbery, was rearrested in July in Olympia, Washington, after featuring himself in an extensive newspaper pictorial about a local movie he was starring in. Stange could have chosen a more veiled stage name, but since it was a horror movie, billed himself merely as Jason Strange, making detection easier for U.S. Marshals. Now why? Oh, why? Would someone who was on the lam from the law get himself a featured role in a movie, thereby earning extensive newspaper coverage in the state, and only add one letter to his name to give himself an alias? Well, one reason and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0312. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0312. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.